So today, it's actually the final episode of College Land. We're working on making new episodes, but the show's going to have a different name and sound a little different. But more on that later. Right now, I'm doing one of my favorite things, checking in on a former student.
So my name is Amber Esters, and I was hired on as the education coordinator at the Women's Center March of 2020, so right at the very beginning of the pandemic.
Amber works at North Carolina Central University, a historically Black university in Durham, just down the road from where I teach. It's where Amber went to college and now where she works.
I was a student here at NCCU from 2009 to 2014. Central is actually a family school for me. My grandfather went here. I've had family members who went here. So I'm very familiar with Central, and it was always an aspiration to go to an HBCU.
I met Amber back in 2019 when she was a grad student at UNC Greensboro, doing an internship with the LGBTA Resource Center at NCCU. You know, she was an amazing student, and we'd spend a lot of time talking about her internship. And I was really thrilled when she got a job at NCCU, and I wanted to hear how she was doing. So today on College Land, we're going to visit the LGBTA Resource Center at Central. And coming with us is my good friend and colleague, Tiffany Holland.
You just can't get enough of me.
It's true.
So real talk, did you call me in because it's like an episode about queer Black folks?
Well, kind of, but another reason, honestly, I mean, I just really love doing this podcast with you.
Thank you, Lisa. I have a ball doing this with you too. And I especially love talking about Black queerness, and official spaces on campus for queer Black folks are incredibly uncommon in higher ed, and they are doing important work. I'm excited. Let's do this.
I'm Lisa Levenstein in Greensboro, North Carolina.
And I'm Tiffany Holland, also in Greensboro.
And this is College Land.
Okay, so like, what exactly are we doing here?
Well, I wanted to catch up with Amber. And honestly, I was kind of following a hunch.
Oh, a hunch, detective?
Okay. I mean, I know. I just had this inkling that something really special was happening at NCCU. I mean, here was an HBCU making space for a dedicated LGBTA center in the South.
So what'd you find out?
Well, let me start by introducing you to Jennifer Williams, because back when Amber was interning at the center, Jennifer was the director. And she went to college at a predominantly white institution. And she says it just wasn't possible to hold all of her identities at once there.
I did my undergrad at a PWI, and a lot of the queer students there made a decision. Am I going to be Black or am I going to be gay? Because you can't do both. That's what it was at that particular point in time. And so to be queer, you were going to be the only Black person around. If you wanted to be Black, there were places specifically that I sought out as an undergrad. Where can I find people play spades? Where's the gospel choir? I know that I can find Black people in those spaces.
So when she started working with queer students at Central, that was a way for her to say, you know, you can be gay and Black, you can be trans and Black, you can be whoever you are.
We established these resources to make sure everybody's okay. And what do you need? Okay, well, if you need community, come here. We're doing this. And your soul will be fed. And you'll be okay.
Whoa. Okay. Honestly, this is already really resonating with me. Lisa, I was an undergrad in the 90s. Like Jennifer, I attended a PWI. And I felt like I was living two lives. In one life, I could be in Black space, which felt like family. But at the time, family wasn't always comfortable to me because I wasn't out yet. But then in my other life, I could be out and date cute girls. But then I felt like I had to listen to like Ani DeFranco and the Indigo Girls.
Oh, no, that's what I was listening to.
Oh, shit. Okay, no, not that there's anything wrong with Ani DeFranco and the Indigo Girls, okay? But bruh, it was the 90s, a golden age of hip-hop and R&B. Just think like Jodeci, Mary J. Blige, and they were not translating to the girls I was trying to talk to. I wish I had a community and a resource like the LGBTA Center so I could just have been me, you know, neither hiding nor play acting. And Lisa, today, these centers are super rare at HBCUs. Right now, there are only four. 4.
I know. I learned that from talking to Eric Martin. He's the coordinator of the LGBTA Resource Center at NCCU right now.
People think the world is changing. People think that the world is becoming more queer. And I always say that queer folks have always been here. You know, these are stories that have been told for ages. We just have more access to it. To know that a school that I was attending already had one and was willing to have those conversations through programming and have a funded center with a director and a coordinator was really impressive, because we're only one of 4 and we were one of the premiering ones in the HBCU division.
So Amber and Jennifer and Eric make up this amazing constellation of people whose lives have been touched by the LGBTA Center in some way. And what's interesting is that a lot of them sort of, I mean, they kind of stumbled upon the center more than they actively sought it out. Like Eric.
I'll never forget, I was in the library and I was just Googling stuff to get involved with now that I was here. And I saw the LGBTA Resource Center and I was like, oh, that sounds really dope. So initially, I just wanted to be around.
And Amber came across the center when she was in grad school.
I was aware of my queer identity, but I didn't step into it until I was able to learn more about it through the center. But grad school really does, at least in my experience, it has changed me for all the great and good and positive ways possible.
Jennifer was also working on a graduate degree when she found the center, back when it was first opening in 2013.
We had to do some type of project on people and cultures and communities that we didn't know about. And so I knew we were just beginning to open our LGBTA Resource Center. And I was connected with a friend who was the then GA. I consulted with her because my project was on transgender relationships. Well, one partner is trans, and that partner steps into that identity while they're married. She was graduating that semester and she was like, well, you know, go talk to this person and talk to this person. I think you would be good to be the GA. And at that point in time, I didn't have a job. So I was like, okay, yeah, let's do this. I spent time in there initially just volunteering, and I would just sit in the center and listen to the students' stories.
Now, the backstory here is that a few months earlier,
an RA said something out of line to a queer student.
And there were a lot of students speaking up about it. So the university formed a committee to look at things.
And what happened?
Well, you know, one win was the LGBTA Resource Center. And it's a dedicated physical space with paid staff. You know, that's something we don't even have at UNC Greensboro. And that's despite the fact that in many circles, I mean, Tiffany, you probably know this, people joke that the G in UNCG stands for UNC Gay.
Nice.
I mean, that's how many queer students we have on our campus. But we still don't have a dedicated space for them, and NCCU does.
That's awesome. Sharing a physical space with folks who outright accept your gender and your sexuality and support you to come into that identity, I mean, it sort of feels like a gay bar in a rural area. The drinks might be shit. The music might leave much to be desired, but you show up because that's where your people are at.
Well, I mean, if we follow that metaphor, Jennifer was the bartender, but instead of pouring drinks.
Oh, no, you're really going for this?
Oh, yeah, yeah. She was serving up community programs.
Wow. Okay. So let me try. What was on the menu, Lisa? Like, what were the specials?
Well, they have discussion groups. They offer LGBTQ plus sensitivity trainings where everyone can learn more about queer issues and culture and encourage inclusivity in their lives. They offer resources for mental and physical health and for intimate partner violence.
Wow. Lisa, this makes me think about how right-wing racists love to shout all about safe spaces. They like to pretend that these spaces are not doing real work, when in fact, these spaces are truly about organizing and building community in order to legitimately save lives.
Absolutely. Research shows that students who join LGBTQ groups are less likely to experience depression. which is actually really huge because we know that queer folks are twice as likely to report mental health issues and they're four times more likely to attempt suicide. And these centers also offer sexual health resources to prevent the spread of STIs. That life-saving care is part of what Jennifer was thinking about when she joined the center.
I had a cousin that was out who lived for 14 years with HIV/AIDS. And he never told anyone in our family that he was sick. He died alone. And later, when they were like cleaning up his stuff, they were reading through like some of his letters and stuff. And that's when they knew that he had known for 14 years that he was sick. Why do Black families, because that was my experience, that is not all experiences, but why does this happen in this particular way with Black families? So I'm grateful for what I have learned because I have had an opportunity to see other folks have very different, very loving experiences. And for folks who did not have very loving experiences, I was also able to be there for them and kind of, you know, just companion them through their undergrad experiences. I'm still connected to quite a few students who check in on me too.
That is deep. And I'm just in awe of how much Jennifer is hitting at so many different points here. Lisa, every semester, every class, there comes a point where my Black students, queer and otherwise, grapple with Black families' accountability to the queer among them. This idea that Black families are more conservative or more Christian and therefore tougher places for folks to be out. Every time, part of our work in those conversations is trying to break down how we even learn these messages about Black families. Studies show, right, that like Black people are no more homophobic than white people.
Totally.
And part of the work that Jennifer is getting at is that Black queer communities learn or affirm that there are so many ways Black people do and therefore can experience families. Families that are supportive and loving and embrace all that is queer and amazing and joyful.
And Central's LGBTA Resource Center is also committed to serving joy.
What about the queer prom that you put on?
That was absolutely fun. The students thoroughly enjoyed it. Like the music was amazing. It was so much fun. And I really look forward to the next prom because I just enjoyed it so much.
Is there a sense behind the idea of the prom that prom isn't something that queer students necessarily got to experience in terms of the totality of their identity when they were in high school?
Absolutely. Students said things like, well, you know, I couldn't go with who I wanted to go with, and I definitely couldn't go dressed as I wanted to be dressed. And so now I'm grown, and I can do what I want to do. So I would like an opportunity to do that. And so that's what prom was. You know, we here at NCCU, we like to set up a DJ and have a good time. We bring some food out, and it's going to be a good time.
Wow, undergrad me would have loved that prom. Hell, old and grown Tiff wants to go to a queer prom right now.
I know, right? But as you might guess, these big parties are just part of the work that the center does to connect people who are coming from really different backgrounds or experiences or identities. There was this discussion group that Amber was part of called Queer Queens.
It was an open space for queer-identifying femme people to kind of just join in fellowship, socialize, and just talk. We talk a lot about identity, sexual behaviors, safety when it comes to engaging in sexual activity, and just kind of exploring different aspects of what it means to be a queer-identified femme, because queerness, femininity, womanhood, those things show up differently for people. And we all perform it in our own unique ways. You could be within a community and still have very different identities within that particular community. And again, that's how diversity shows up. So having those discussions and allowing people to learn more about those who might share similar identities
but we're still different and unique, and that's to be respected.
And Eric has really been working on issues related to the intersection of bisexuality and trans identities.
A lot of the conversations that I've either been a part of or heard about bisexuality, right, is the idea that bisexuality is gendered, and when it's gendered, it's usually for the male gaze. So bisexual women are typically more accepted in society. And so then you have discourse between individuals saying that bi men are secretly gay or bi men are cheaters or what have you. And both of those things are not true. But then when you add trans individuals into it, it's the idea that trans individuals aren't on the spectrum of bisexuality because trans individuals aren't men or aren't women or where have you. And again, we know those things aren't true. Trans women are women and trans men are men. And the individuals who date trans individuals, their sexual orientation is not changing. They just are open to dating trans individuals, right? But I also want to unpack the fact that trans individuals do receive a lot of discrimination from people who are not straight, because there is a difference between sexual orientation and gender identity. And a lot of cis queer folks don't understand. And so, yes, it's the LGBT community, but a lot of times it tends to be the LG community versus the B community versus the T community. And I think that's terrible. And I really want us to be able to have conversations or understand that the struggles and oppressions may not be the same, but they're intersectional.
I'm loving this conversation. We keep coming back to this theme of the expansiveness of these spaces. It takes honest and oftentimes difficult conversations to really allow ourselves to grow and make our community stronger. One thing that Audre Lorde taught us in all her brilliance is that we need to recognize and embrace difference. Forcing people to be one type of Black or one type of queer only limits the potential of how we can be in and change the world. But Lisa, relatedly, can I ask a question?
Sure. What's up?
Like, where's the Q in the center? Why the LGBT skip the Q A resource center? Am I missing something?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. And I asked Eric about it.
Truth be told, you know, it's, when I first got here, just like, I mean, okay, there's no Q, but, you know, as of right now, it's sticking. Maybe in the future, fingers crossed, we can talk about a name change that's more seamless. Because for me and my muscle memory, the Q is like a part of the acronym. So like LGBTA, it's kind of like feels like a little incomplete, but you know, you got to pick your battles.
Okay. Eric knows his community and where they are right now. Plus the acronym LGBTQIA+ is ever changing and evolving. I personally love queer, but I get why some people don't like it. The word has historically been weaponized to stigmatize our community, but I like queer as a verb, a thing you do. My crew and I are queer because we're about flipping things inside out, refusing to accept what is or has been as the only option. I do respect, however, that the folks at Central chose LGBTA. And at the end of the day, they're doing the work of uplifting their queer students, regardless of the name.
And, you know, I think it's important to add that Eric's doing a lot of work to reach out to folks beyond even the LGBTQ community. I mean, he wants to connect with straight cis men on campus. And by the way, men are outnumbered on that campus like 2-1.
70% of our campus is women or female identified. That's great. And also it makes it a little bit more challenging because for me, I'm really passionate about working with male identified individuals because of the world we live in, right? We work and we live and we operate in the patriarchy. And so a lot of my work, you know, as a cis man is to unpack that. And so that's really where another place where I want to take the center and start having the conversation amongst men, amongst Black men specifically, about how we can be better to everyone and how we can understand intersectionality and how the patriarchy really affects everyone.
Would that be reaching out beyond LGBT identified individuals to the broader community for these conversations about masculinity? Or are you thinking about particularly those who identify as LGBT?
I think that, well, such a loaded question, because the work starts at home and then we move outward. So I mentioned earlier that the, you know, discrimination between those who have a sexual identity that's not straight and a gender identity that's not cis, sometimes there can be, you know, discourse. So of course, I will want to continue to unpack that work. But I also think the work involves cisgender heterosexual men as well. So I really want to, you know, pioneer that work and really unpack what we think we know about ourselves. Because a lot of times we think we believe these things because we've been indoctrinated with this kind of stuff, but we might not even believe it. You know, the world says, society says, our parents, our guardians say, so now you are navigating 9 months of space by yourself. What does this actually mean to you?
Again, in the right-wing imagination, colleges and even elementary schools are these places where all these lefty profs indoctrinate students, brainwashing them or whatever. But Eric is getting at something beautiful. You give people the space to think, introduce them to folks they have never met before, make space for actual conversation. That's where change happens. In so many ways, our world is visibly blacker, browner, and more queer. We have gained some legal protections. There's a lot more media representation, and the internet means you can find community and information wherever you are. But the attacks are relentless. Governors and state legislators are so worried about stopping wokeness, which is this coded racist and queerphobic rhetoric to, like, pathologize and demonize Black and queer folk. The real people under attack, of course, are not the rich pundits or children's authors or politicians, but the folks trying not to be erased from history books, the folks who are over-policed and criminalized, the folks swimming in student debt, the folks in minimum wage jobs without health care or adequate childcare.
Right. A few weeks ago, a really hateful, transphobic person came to campus to give a talk. And, you know, in the past, our students have protested these kinds of incidents of transphobia on campus. But this time, oh my gosh, it was beautiful. They decided to hold a counter event called Celebrating Queer. There's a DJ, pizza, booths, and there was like tons of dancing.
That is amazing. Look, I love when our people clown the bigots to their faces, but that fight is exhausting. Dancing with your people, letting your joy drown out the haters. Bruh, we need those spaces right now.
I totally agree. This work to sustain and protect queer and other marginalized folks and their futures, I mean, it is so crucial. And spaces like the LGBTA Resource Center, I mean, they are like on the front lines. I actually remember a time when Amber was doing her internship at NCCU, and she told me about an event that she helped organize where she got some pretty upsetting pushback.
The R. Kelly series? Oh my gosh. So there was a comment made by somebody, a masculine person within the space, to the extent of you can't turn a hoe into a housewife. And unfortunately, leading up to that comment, there was a lot of, you know, side comments and expressions that kind of leaned into that idea. I felt uncomfortable because multiple reasons. Because unfortunately, it continued to otherize and fetishize, sexualize all the things, femme-presenting and femme-bodied individuals, and disregarding our sexuality and our, you know, sexual prowess, anything like that. And it's unfortunate because that individual was pretty set in his ideology about it. It's like, no, I said what I said, it just is what it is, I don't care who I offend. What I've learned from that individual and those who share space with that individual is that I'm only here to plant seeds. I try my hardest to separate my personal feelings about things when I recognize people do not have the same level of knowledge around a particular topic. And I also recognize a lot of people are coming in with their own conditioning and socializing. And I understand that person and people who have similar ideologies up as that person, you're coming in as a cisgender individual, as a masculine presenting individual, a masculine bodied individual. You have a lot of privilege. And because of that privilege, sometimes it clouds your thoughts and judgments, your ability to engage safely with others. And prayerfully, as I continue to work within this position, I can provide education that allows people to kind of just like break those chains.
We had an alum who would come back and just kind of spend time on campus. This person did not really understand the need for having a space specifically for LGBT identifying folks. And he asked me, why is there no H in LGBTA center? And I was like, H for what? He was like, H for heterosexual. And I was just, I thought he was joking. And so I laughed. I really laughed in this guy's face. But I thought he was joking. He was dead serious. And he was just like, no, I don't feel included again. I was just like, but if you cross the threshold, you good, right? That's kind of how this works. And that's why we have this specific space where you can come in here and be as gay as you want to be. And nobody's ever going to sweat you for it, because if you cross that threshold, it's not the same. And so that's why we have a specific space just for queer identifying folks. Now, what I loved about this is that I got to see how serious my leadership was about protecting us and really like, no, you deserve to be here. And so the dean of students, he showed up. He was there within 10 minutes and told that person to kick rocks and not to come back again. One of the things that I've noticed and have been very appreciative of with a lot of our staff here, they may not understand the finer points, again, of identity and identity development and all that good stuff. And, you know, queer culture, trans culture, they don't understand. But what they do understand is like, these are our babies and we want to protect them. It's inspiring and encouraging to some extent. You run into folks in places that you would not expect it, who are actual, factual allies, like, no, I'm down for the cause. Let's go.
You know, hearing that the administrators have Jennifer's back, it's amazing, because the center has become a model for other people trying to start their own centers. People from other schools, I mean, they're just calling them up and they're saying, hey,
we're driving up from Georgia. We'll be over from Tennessee. We're going to stop through Durham. Can we have an hour or two to kind of just talk with you all about, you know, what the process has been like? What does your programming look like? And so if we've been able to do what we've been able to do with the LGBT Resource Center, with the Women's Center, in just the time that we've been here, I can only imagine what we could do if we were adequately funded. Like I go to other schools, other state-supported schools, even some private schools, and maybe the LGBTA Resource Center has a staff of maybe 4. I can't imagine.
Lisa, HBCUs in general are doing all this work with a fraction of the budget of PWIs. That means that when federal or state funding changes, HBCUs feel it the most. And at centers like this, where the work is so intense, the funding could be transformative.
I could just get in here. I can hire the people. They can do what they can do. I don't have to worry about stitching things together. That would change some stuff. You know, I hate to say it, but, you know, money, like, not even I hate to say it. I hate that it is what it is. But money would really change some things.
I agree with Jennifer as far as funding. Funding, if we had additional funding, I can only imagine the heights we could reach. I think that just a part of the narrative for Black folks in America, period, we kind of have to make, you know, these big things out of very little. So we've been able to carry along, but seeing additional support outside of funding, like also just continue to share the relevancy of an HBCU.
To put some numbers to this, a 2019 study said that private HBCU funding dropped more than 40% between 2003 and 2015. 40%. I mean, Tiffany, I'm sure you remember, we saw that play out right here in Greensboro a few years ago when Bennett College almost folded.
Absolutely. And I think this constant underfunding is partly why Mackenzie Scott's millions of dollars to HBCUs was so significant. Yeah. At this point, I think she's given millions to like 23 HBCUs, including A&T and Winston-Salem State here in North Carolina. But is like every school supposed to wait for a gift from Mackenzie Scott? And if a school does get some windfall like that, how much is guaranteed to go to projects like the LGBTA Resource Center or adequate staffing for that work?
I mean, when Jennifer stepped away from the center recently, she's doing like 3 additional jobs.
I was the LGBTA Resource Center up until September of this year. The Witness Center position had been vacant. And they needed someone to serve as the director for the Women's Center. And so I was tapped to do that. So from October of 2020 until September of this year, I served as the director of the Women's Center, the associate director for diversity and inclusion, and also the coordinator of the LGBTA Resource Center. I still love the work. However, I had also been doing that work since 2013. It was time for something.
Lisa, this episode is giving me all the feels.
I know.
We have to work so hard to make these beautiful spaces. But the folks doing the work day in and day out are getting burned out and pushed out.
I know. But in this case, Tiffany, even though Jennifer was moving on, luckily Eric was already a student leader. Or a lavender liaison, as they like to call it.
Nice! Lavender liaison. I love it.
I know. And he was ready to step right into Jennifer's role.
I remember meeting my director and Jennifer for the first time, and we had really great conversations. And after that meeting, I said to a friend of mine, you know, this is really great. I'm excited to be, you know, in this student role, I would love to do something like what they do in the future. When I was cleaning out an old wallet, I was transferring wallets, I found their business cards from that day specifically. And I was just overcome with emotion because I said I would love to do what they're doing. And now I'm literally in the role. So I think that that's, you know, something that I hold near and dear to my heart.
You know, Tiffany, you've been talking about family so much in this episode, and that is the word that almost everyone I spoke with used to describe their work.
They say in orientation, like, it's family feel. It's like a family here, and it really does feel like a family, even as a staff member. And being able to pour into students the way some of the staff and faculty poured into me is very fulfilling. It was always important to be in a university surrounded by people who looked like me and had similar interests as far as like uplifting, mobilizing folks with similar identities.
So, you know, over the past year, you know, we've kind of redefined, you know, what family looks like and what love was and what, you know, friends and closeness looks like. And so, yeah, you're shifting culture. You're changing the conversation. And I love it because let me tell you something. There's nothing like going to an HBCU. And people may tell you that, but you'll never know it unless you're here. I promise you that. And so to be able to do this type of work at an HBCU, it brings a special badge of honor that I can't describe to you. It just is.
On that note, I want to take a moment to acknowledge our family here at College Land. This is our last episode, and listeners, this episode and this goodbye, I mean, it's bittersweet. But do stay subscribed or hit subscribe if you haven't yet, because we're hoping to be back with a new series and a new co-host.
That's me. So when all of that happens, we'll drop something in the feed and you will be the first to know what we're up to.
It's been an honor to work with our amazing team, and thank you to every one of you who tuned in to be with us for this journey. College Land is produced by Craig Ely and Jade Iseri Ramos. Danielle Ferrari is our researcher and publicist. Our theme music is by Josh Wilson, and additional music is from Blue Dot Sessions. A special thanks to UNC Greensboro for their support. College Land is hosted by me, Lisa Levenstein, along with Tiffany Holland. The show was created with Nan Edstad, and Rochelle Wilson produced season 1. We hope to see you again.